is as good of a time as any to sort of divert a little bit from our normal podcast. This one features a morning DJ, an on-air personality. I don't think he's a disc jockey. I think he's an on-air personality. He works from 6 to 10 in the morning with a crew. His show is called The Dudley and Bob Show. It's on here in Austin on KLBJ-FM. You can listen to it at KLBJFM.com if you're not in Austin or if you don't wake up that early. I know they podcast as well, but he also has a podcast outside of the radio show. It's called Taint and Teabag. He talks about it on the thing. I was lucky enough to be a guest on his podcast earlier this year. I drank a lot, and then I went and played a show with John D. Graham, who is going to be a guest hopefully soon. Anyway, you can hear the Taint and Teabag podcast at taintandteabag.com, and they've done a live one with Doug Benson, and it's a cool podcast. So it was definitely inspirational getting mine. So this is a different kind of podcast, a different kind of conversation. He's not a musician, but we've known each other, and he's in entertainment, and he's in broadcasting, and he was interested in my podcast. I was interested in having him as a guest because I always enjoy talking to him. So Dale Dudley is my guest today on episode 13, the first non-musician episode. Now, I'm sure these are going to come up from time to time. I have different friends that are photographers. My girlfriend's an amazing artist and a musician as well. So you know, we're going to have non-musicians from time to time. So before we go any further, I want to remind you that on Monday, October 3rd, if you're listening to this, and it's before Monday, October 3rd, 2011, and you live in Austin, come to Momo's. We're going to be having our very first live podcast with the supergroup, The Coveters. It's going to be great. It's going to be 8 p.m. Monday, October 3rd at Momo's. So don't forget to put that on your calendar and come out. So I guess without further ado, here's my friend, Dale Dudley.
Lord!
Dale Dudley, that was the hardest thing, was trying to find music for you.
Oh, is that not the usual music you use?
No, I usually play a bit of someone's music before.
What was that?
That was Hickey Burr by Quincy Jones.
Well, I hate that you already have a better setup than I do.
Really?
On the podcast, yeah.
It's the piano.
Well, no, I mean, I go to a musician's apartment, and I expect you to have gear. I don't expect you to have a... You just hit a button and walked over to your mic and everything started. Nothing works that smoothly for me.
Well, I spent a little time getting ready for you.
Yeah.
Plug some things in.
Did we inspire you at all?
Yeah, you did. You totally did.
To do the podcast?
Yeah. I was thinking about doing it since around the time when you put yours out. Like I've listened to a bunch, and I was into them, and then when I heard yours, and then I went and was on yours, actually saw how it was done. I wasn't as scared to do it.
No, I think the trepidation of the podcast is I'm so used to the broadcast world. And for those of you who don't know me, Johnny, I'm a radio guy. I'm not a musician. Those
right.
of you tuning in are going to be sourly disappointed if you're tuning in to hear anything
about
music. No,
but you're a big music supporter.
Have been. I'd like to think I have.
Yeah.
Austin, at least. Yeah. You know? I'm just the local shock jock who, you know, I was thinking about this on the way over here. What the hell are we talking about? But I started thinking about it. You and I are just kind of guys who've just tried to survive.
Yeah.
Just doing the best we can.
Yeah.
You know, coming from crazy backgrounds.
Yeah. Miles Zuniga was just on here, and his comes out tomorrow, and it's the same kind of thing. He's a survivor as well.
Yeah.
Made it through.
There's those of us who just, not looking for any kind of sympathy, there's those of us who just tried to find our way through a maze. That's all we've ever done. We've never really been trying to I don't know. I just think when you come from different backgrounds of parenting or whatever's happened in your life, like in yours, that you're just literally going through a maze. But getting back to the podcast thing, since that's where we started, we can get into all the other stuff. And please don't let me take this over because
I'm a
broadcaster.
Go ahead. You make my job so much easier.
Now,
and plus I learn.
The thing I found out about podcasting as compared to the broadcast world, we have so many rules in the broadcast world, and that's why we did, I actually... had bought the equipment, which I don't even use anymore. Made it way too complicated. And I just said to my wife one night, I'm going to go do a podcast. I'll never put it up. I didn't have a place to put it, but I'm going to go do one. And I'd sat with a bottle of vodka, and I literally, my friends call it the...
Is that the first one you put up?
Yeah, they call it the suicide net. Well, that was the thing. I was thinking about that, too, on the way over here, is that what's the difference between podcasting? I think that people love the fact that you're not going to edit it, and it's going to have flaws.
Yeah.
Where we're trained in broadcasting to keep the pace going.
Right.
And to keep... to keep the momentum going and to keep the humor going and to keep this going. And I think there's a group of people that just want to sit in on a conversation, whether it be somebody they like or not like.
Yeah.
And the thing that I found about mine, which I really thought I'd put it up. And when you heard me joking around with my wife or talking about religion or anything like that, that what I would get would be, because the internet is so full of negative feedback,
right,
that it would be this horrific, attack coming back of people going, why, who cares? Nobody wants to hear what you think. But it's not. It's the people seeking a conversation.
Yeah.
Seeking something to keep them company in the car. And they have the option of, if it does bore them or they don't agree with something, of just moving on to the next thing. So the reaction that I got when I put mine out was so much different than I get from the radio show.
Right.
It was like a thank you coming, going, thanks, man, you got to keep doing these. And I was like, well, this is totally the opposite reaction I expected putting a podcast up, because I expected that crowd out there that, you're lame, you're Howard Stern, you're trying to do this or whatever, that's your regular job, from this thing where people go, no, this is what we want. We want unedited. We don't want the government telling us. We don't want commercials.
Yeah,
and if we do have commercials, we want you telling you just tell us what to go buy. Which we could kind of have a sponsor in ours now, a couple of sponsors.
You do, so.
That means $100.
Yeah,
so
it's not bad.
No,
I hope to do that with this.
But you should. It's a weird. It's a cool phenomenon, and I don't know where it's going, but I like it. I mean,
I like it too.
I think it's the next wave of broadcasting. It's cool that anybody can do it.
So man, you just touched on a few things that I do want to ask you. So you're morning.
I'm a morning radio guy in Austin, if somebody's listening from out of town. And I've been doing it for here in Austin for 25 years in March. And the business is getting so weird. Can we curse on this podcast?
Totally.
It's so fucking weird.
Yeah.
And it's just so fucking exhausting sometimes. And is it an easy job? Yeah, it's a job where you sit in air conditioning and you talk. But the parameters and the rules and the things that they've done now to make it, they just make it so overwhelmingly tough. Especially when you have a family. I mean, and the rating systems now are so volatile and inaccurate.
How are they done? Are they done with focus?
They're
groups?
Done with a little thing called a people meter,
right?
And you're supposed to carry who, if you're in the panel or whatever it's called. I don't see.
It's almost like a Nielsen.
And it's one company. And like if they hear this podcast, they'll freak out,
right?
Because you're not supposed to talk about it. It's like a secret,
right? Right.
But that you're supposed to keep secret, but it's not a secret. And it's just really, really a weird way of measuring thousands of people's opinions out of a few dozen or a few hundred.
Right.
So it's very volatile, and it goes, I mean, you can literally go from feast to famine just that quickly.
Yeah.
And I've been doing it a long time, and the old system was equally as bad, but it wasn't as volatile. Up and down. So, it's a weird way to make a living. Plus, it's a really immature way to make a living. And I'm only seeing that now. I just turned 50. And after all these years of having fun on the air, and I love joking and busting balls with my friends, it's kind of like now I go, oh, shit, I'm still doing what I did when I was 16 years old. And there are people, friends of mine, who are surgeons.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, you must feel that some with music. Where you go, everybody grew up.
Yeah. Or you're with a bunch of your friends. There's bankers, surgeons, and stock people.
But you talk to the surgeon and he goes, no, I wish I could do something like you, because it seems free. But there's a stability that other people have that are in...
It seems like stability.
That you and I in music... And in radio or any kind of job like that, where it's show business,
right?
Where you just, there's a time where you just look around and go, oh, okay, shit, why did I? Because I just remember, you and I have known each other for a long time, and I just remember there was a time when you would go, all you cared about was being downtown.
Yeah.
And as long as you were able to pay the bills, you didn't give a shit about anything else. Yeah. So it was just that, and it was almost like you kind of forgot to get a skill.
Right.
That's just the feeling. That's always
Now. Do you have that feeling like, well, what if you had to go out and get a job tomorrow? Like, what the fuck would
I'd have no fucking idea. I'm actually thinking about going back to school. I really am. I've got all the paperwork ready to go back to school. It's weird because I've been able to survive, and there's something to be said about that, but they don't give you money for surviving. So
no.
It's kind of a weird little it really changes when you have children, though. And I got two kids.
You got two kids. Congratulations. Yeah. You just had your second.
Right.
A daughter.
I know. I'll be 70. I'll be 70 when she's a dancer. So
so let me ask you this. You described yourself as a shock jock. Is that something you think that's held over from an earlier part of your morning career?
Yeah, but I've always looked at it and almost to my own demise. I've just always tried to be very honest about my life.
That's what I got from you.
And people, believe it or not, people use that against you. And yeah, I'm not crying. I've had a great career. I've had an incredible career, and I'm still having a blast, and I'm well paid.
Right. Well, it's not like you're playing a character or like you're in a movie or you're a rock star doing this thing. It's you that you're putting out on the line. So when people hate you, they hate you.
Yeah, they hate you a lot.
You, yeah.
No, they really do. They hate you a lot.
Yeah.
That's why my writing job on the side is so rewarding. I only get $300 a column, but I write for a magazine here in Austin.
Austin Monthly.
Monthly.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be a humor column, but it ends up being a pussy column. And I don't mean that like the vagina. I mean that like they called you in high school. It's
right.
A part of me that I write from a different perspective of me than not the radio guy.
Yeah.
It's a character. Even though I say it's honesty, it's a character that you play on the radio. You have to have it. God, I'm having this conversation. Actually, I had this in my closet yesterday when I sent you a text saying, yeah, I'll come do the podcast. I actually had this conversation with you in my head.
Okay.
It is about brutal honesty.
Right.
But it is a character. You have to have some bravado.
Right, right.
If you don't have any bravado, you can't bust balls and make jokes.
And there's not as much of a sense of humor.
You can't be sensitive.
Yeah.
You have to go in and go, I got to do, I'm going to stay. And you have to keep the tempo going for 4 hours. The column lets me be the person that I really am.
Yeah.
And tell stories from a perspective, of us, where I grew up and what I saw, and the family that I grew up in and all that. And so that's kind of a 1 month little peek of what really goes on. Because the part that the people either love or hate on the air is the bravado. You have to have it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing if you're a lead singer of a band.
Sure. Yeah. It's your defense.
It's like the reason Mick Jagger struts and does what he does, and I'm not comparing myself even to Johnny Gowdy in that sense.
No, but I mean, it's the same thing. You have to
get up and show some confidence.
Yeah.
And when you don't, that's when they, I forgot what your original question was now. But if you don't show it, and that's another thing, great thing about podcasting is you don't have to.
Yeah, you can drift
go
off.
Back to the original question.
Right,
you can just drift off into something else. So it's a weird way to live your life, and it was all about the rock and roll. But that's about honesty.
About shock jock and that kind of.
So it's when I started doing it, it was just I loved radio and I loved all those jocks that introduced the records, and they all had those incredible voices which I never got. And they all smoke, too, and they're all dead now. But it was that radio thing. I couldn't be a musician. I didn't have the skill for that. I learned that early on. My dad bought me a guitar when I was 14. I learned all the chords. Mm-hmm. But I realized I didn't have an ear, and I real quickly moved away. I didn't try to be in a band or anything like that. I just didn't have an ear for it. I can sing, but aside from that, I just music. But I loved being in rock and roll. And then getting into the radio, I started to listen to cassette tapes of these guys across the country. Then when I got into radio, I realized – around 1983, I heard a tape of Howard Stern, and I said, this is what's next, because he was killing all these disc jockeys. I mean, he was just killing them, going to these markets.
And you were in radio then?
Yeah, I was in radio, but I was young. I was very young. I was about 20. I think the first time I heard Howard, I was 20.
Where was this, in West
Texas? I was in Lubbock, the first time I heard him. Yeah, and I said, this is what this is going to be. So used to the comparisons bothered me a lot, but now it doesn't at all. It's kind of like comparing a band that sounds like another band. It's like if somebody sounds like the Beatles or REM,
I could see why someone would say something like that when your hair was long and you wore a leather jacket.
But I did that.
You know what I'm saying? But everybody did.
But no. I will readily admit I tried to look like Howard. Absolutely, which is silly because he's
like a guy in a band. Because like, you tried to look like a giant Jew.
Oh yeah. Well, not as much a Jew, I guess. I didn't even know that. Never even came into it. But absolutely. I mean, that's something I readily confess now. Which is also, you know, that's really where you. The part I think I really started to grow up and be my own person is when I finally admitted where my influences came from, because I had such, you know, no real guidance as a kid.
Right.
As to you're going to, I was never told I was going to go to college. I was told I wasn't going to get to go to college, you know?
Right.
I mean, that was told to me. You know,
right.
We don't have the money. And
you didn't go?
No.
Did you?
Well, no, I went. Yeah. A couple of years, you know, here and there, junior college and things like that. So. I think that's a freeing moment in your life when you finally admit who your influences are.
Yeah.
You know, I've interviewed tons of musicians, and that's always a weird, squirrely question.
Yeah, people get nervous.
Yeah, it is, because I don't think anybody wants to admit that they've either idolized somebody or that they've modeled themselves after somebody. But you know, going back to high school, there was a guy in high school that I wanted to be like Barry Jones. He was the funniest guy. And so going back to the business, I got into that whole zoo type thing for a while where you tried to go in and record stuff the day before and then play it the next day.
Along with the live thing?
Some sort of skit. And then it segued into, well, you know, the only way to be is just to tell stories. And that was the one thing I think I was blessed with is I have these stories from childhood, some of them, you know, horrific, but a lot of them, I think I was a pretty good observer of my family and my friends and things like that, and my parents' friends, that whole Texas thing has worked for me, telling those stories, you know. But who's to say, you know? And that's where the business has gotten really strange, is it's not about that anymore. It's not about breaking on time and making sure you end on something funny and make sure you, what is it?
How much has that changed? Like timing wise.
That's
like
changed
before,
a lot.
Before, were you able to get this in within this 30 minutes, I'm cool.
Right.
But
you
now,
can go long or whatever. Now it's you've got to break right at this certain time because of these devices and what
computers.
They give you credit for and what they, it's crazy. It's just crazy. I mean, they've, you know, they can take you in now. They haven't done it, but they will. They can take you in now and they can show you where you were talking about something and someone tunes out. They can show you where people have tuned out. And, you know, that's kind of like
how can you do that with that length of a show? I mean, that's
a
long time.
Well, it's kind of like if you're in a band, it would be kind of like somebody walking up and going, "Hey, we just had two guys walk out when you sang that song. Don't sing that song anymore." I mean, it's so subjective, and a weird way to live. But you know what though, dude? Here's what I do. I get up in the morning, and if I'm having an off day, let's say I've really partied on the weekend or something, you know, which is something I've gone in and out of giving up over the years. But I most days say, shit, I still get to do what I dreamed of doing when I was 16 years old and I went and begged the guy for the job. And there aren't a lot of people. Almost everyone that I know, people that you and I know, that we love, are out of that business and will never be back.
Yeah.
So you just got to ride it out. You got to ride this out. I mean, you got to ride out the music thing as long as you possibly can.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you've had staying power compared to a lot of different things. So let me ask you this: at one point in the '90s, they put Howard Stern on the air. Not to keep on this, but this
That's
seems
right.
like a good conversation path. When they put Howard Stern on the air, they put him up. Was it against you, or was it starting later than you? I can't remember. But there was another station that started carrying Howard Stern.
Yeah,
here
twice.
In town.
Yeah.
How did that take away? Were you still stronger than him in the ratings? Or?
Yeah, but you know what though, I don't sit and claim that we did anything. I mean, that we just got lucky on that deal. First of all, scared the shit out of me.
I mean,
literally.
Yeah.
You know, there I was. You know, nobody had the internet then, so nobody did. You know, nobody was looking stuff up and Googling things, and and I thought, well, fuck, this is it here. But they put him on a signal that was weak, and the advertising was weak, so it never worked out. And then they did it again a few years later. That's just the facts, really.
Right. Sorry about that.
That's okay. What was it?
The host.
You farted in music
turn off
too.
His phone. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Even
so no, it was it never really made an impact, and you know. But I also think there's something in the cosmos that looks out for people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that looks out for you and says you're going, this is the path you're going to take and you're going to walk. I'm not a religious guy at all. I'm probably anti-religious.
Right.
But I think there's something that watches
I've
out.
I've heard that. There was something you were talking about the other day about you went to dinner and somebody's wife said to your wife, at least she's not married to you because you're, is that right? Did that happen?
At least she's not married
no,
to
like,
what?
No. God, what did
oh,
you
Oh, no, what's it like to be about? Married to somebody
yeah,
with no religion?
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, this woman at a dinner, not at a dinner, we were at another person's house, and I feel bad now because I made that an on-air bit, and I probably shouldn't have because I put Bob in a spot as Bob, as Bob's friends. And that's why my podcast, if you're listening to this and you're, I do a, we do, we should
yeah,
say the name
Taint
of the podcast.
Teabag.
We do a podcast, go to taintandteabag.com if you're still listening to this.
Yeah.
10
I
minutes,
like that you're timing
15,
it.
No, if you're still, it's nature. If you're still listening to this 15 minutes in and you tuned in and you said, this is not a musician, I want to tune out, but you've stuck it out this long, then you should go to taintandteabag.com. Or look up Taint and Teabag on iTunes. That's a name that Bobcat Goldthwait gave for morning radio guys. And when he was making fun of radio, he hates to do. Well, that's the one thing. That's another thing we might talk about. Is
yeah,
the
I
one thing
the,
I
that.
Think one of our saving graces is we embrace the comedy world and the music world because we weren't funny enough or talented enough to do it on our own. What were we originally talking about here? Oh, the woman. So
yeah,
because I've said on the air my doubt. I just really. Just can't stand the pompousness of religion, and I'm not talking about somebody who's being faithful.
Yeah, no, you're talking about your private beliefs.
I'm talking about your private beliefs. And my nephew is gay, and it's my sister's oldest boy. My sister lives here in Austin, and I was raised to be a homophobe and to be a racist, and I was taught all these crazy things that you look back now. And you think that's insanity to tell a child, to tell someone that that someone is different and that you should ignore them or that they should be ostracized because they're different than the family was.
Yeah.
And then while my parents were, you know, my dad was a philanderer and a cheater.
Yeah, my dad too.
And a horrible, you know, just
he would go to
fucking,
church on Sunday or tell me that I was a jackass for not going to church. And you're just kind of like, dude.
No, and my dad would, you know, hit my mother and my dad would, cheat on my mother. And then we had this weird thing where we went to church every Sunday night and Wednesday. It finally
what religion?
Church of Christ.
What is that?
Church of Christ is kind of like Baptist, but they don't believe in instrumental music because there's a passage in the Bible that says make joyous music with your hearts.
Yeah.
And some fucking crazy person back in the 1800s or seven, whenever it was started, said that must mean
no
that there can be no guitars or no pianos in the church. So the positive of this is if you ever meet somebody from the Church of Christ, they can usually sing their asses off.
Right.
Everyone in my family
can
carry a tune and can sing a cappella for you if you want. If we were drinking right now, I'd do it for you.
Yeah.
But they can sing. But and that's an example of the craziness of religion.
Right.
It's and here's the problem I run into with people because they get really angry with you and listeners. And I'm trying to wean myself from talking about it on my show, on my radio show, is you don't want what's been instilled from you since childhood that you feel comfortable in. You don't want to change that pair of shoes.
Right.
They're so comfortable.
Right.
And it's so comfortable to believe
it's a tradition at that point.
And then when you start to doubt it, you get scared.
Yeah.
I know this started five or six years ago for me. And I remember just being frightened at the fact that what if there's no God?
Yeah.
Well, that can't be true. And that's the fear of death and the fear of our own demise. And I still don't know if there's a God or not. I still hold out eternal hope. And I still talk to my mother at night. My mother passed away in 2004 and I still talk to her at night. But the thing about it is that going back to this woman, I've talked about this on the air, and then I don't mind her saying that to me, but she had never met my wife, and she said at a dinner party, she's outside, and she says, "So what's it like living with a man with no religion?" You know, and my wife is much younger than me, and she said, "Well, he kind of has religion." You know, she didn't know what to answer because she can't answer for me,
right?
It's almost like saying, what's it like to live with somebody who's colorblind?
Yeah.
You know, I guess this woman believed that I should should tell my wife, here's the dogma. We're going to do this.
Right.
And you're going to do that.
And we're voting for so-and-so.
Yeah. So I was really pissed off the next day. But then, now that I look back, you know, we had been arguing about politics anyway, and the woman was probably, you know, the thing about it is people, a lot of people, when they hear the radio show, they want to think that you're that character, so they ask questions.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's curious.
But I think it was more curious. I need to cut the lady a break because she's a nice lady. I think it's curiosity about the person you're meeting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the same thing with you. When we had you on my podcast, we talked about your mom's murder because that subject matter, investigations and stuff, interests me. So I'm going to ask you about it until we get it out of the way and get to know each other. And I think if I was around that woman a few more times and you had a chance to talk rationally, you know, there was already all sorts of flags being thrown up because she had brought up Sarah Palin and it was a whole thing.
Right.
So, you know, but it is what it is. It's funny how people, though, are get so uncomfortable when their shoes are, shoes is the best analogy, when you challenge their comfortable shoes.
Yeah.
I don't know if that sounds silly or not.
No, it doesn't. Let me ask you this. So socially, you bring your, like, and you brought up comedians as well. That's the soul that you have, you know, you have a comedian soul and you're doing the best kind of comedy where you're always just telling the truth, right? So you go and you do this. How, obviously your wife is incredibly understanding and cool and game for your shenanigans and antics, but like socially in situations like this at a dinner party, does this stuff come back, not just with strangers coming up and saying like, oh, you said this, I don't like you, but people you actually know getting mad at you for something like this? Like, is there some kind of like,
oh, are you talking
social disaster that happens with you with friends? Do you get calls sometimes after shows? Like,
I have.
What did you do, man? What did you say?
I have, but I stopped doing what I realized. And this, I can tell you the story of when it changed. To me, I always thought anything was fodder if I saw it with my eyes or
talked
about it.
That's what I wondered. Yeah.
I had a lawyer who, God rest her soul, she changed my life. She was when all the Stern stuff was going on and we did well, she got me money out of that and she changed my whole socioeconomic system. And
you're her name about was Cindy. I worked with her. She's a good friend of mine.
She was my sister.
Yeah.
Cindy Lazar. My older sister in California. I've always said my older sister in California and I, you know, aren't close because she was much older than me. And I always said Cindy Lazari was my sister. And she was for those who don't know, Cindy was a mostly a lawyer who dealt with musicians in Austin. Uh-huh. And there aren't a lot that will deal with musicians. No. And when they do, they want to charge them lawyers' fees. And Cindy was a woman who understood where you were in life and would charge you accordingly and not break your back.
Yeah.
And she took me under her wing. It's really funny. We first had a date or two. We actually went out after her first marriage in the late 80s, early 90s.
Wow.
And she realized very quickly that I was way too immature for her, and she became my lawyer. But one day I was on the air and I was talking about, I forget what it was. Something came up and I said, well, you know, she was building a swimming pool at her house. And I'm on the air and I said, hey, yeah, well, you know, that swimming pool Cindy Lazar is building, that's mine. And she called me up after the show and she said, don't you fucking ever talk about my life on the air, ever.
That's awesome.
And no, and now looking back, she was right. And, and that, like I said, I don't know. I think the thing that I'm trying to say here is there are certain people that we were raised by wolves. And by wolves, I mean society.
Right.
If you didn't grow up with parents that were normal,
right,
then you had to learn things along the way. And this is something I learned along the way. I was in my early 30s. And there I was talking about somebody else's personal house.
Right.
And she called me up and said, don't. And so I've made it an effort. If there's something that happens to Johnny Gowdy,
right,
if you came in here and sat in here with no pants on,
right,
with an erection,
you would talk about it.
No, I'd say, can I talk about it? Because it's your house and it's your erection.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, I like it.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, if it's your shit, I'll either ask permission if it's funny. Or, for example, today I told a story about a friend of mine who put two GPS trackers on his wife's car and her lover's car. And before I did that, I said, can I go on the air with this now? I won't say your name or her name. It took him a while, but I finally one day I called him and I said, dude, I got to tell that story.
Sometimes you realize the story is good.
And he said, yeah, go ahead and do it. But I would never do that to somebody unless they gave me permission. And with Amanda, my wife, it's the same way. Something will happen. I go, I really need to talk about this on the air. And she'll go, no, absolutely not. And then I'll go, really need to. And then a day later, I'll go, baby, and she'll go, no. And then 3 weeks later, I'll go, she'll go ahead, fucking do it on the air. Yeah. It's funny now.
Right.
But I don't, but my own stuff is always been fair game. And that's the difference between where I've survived. I modeled my career after someone, absolutely, but I always try to put myself out there to be made fun of first.
Right.
I try to bring in something that I know is going to be humiliating.
Right.
You know, my drug use. I had a period in the 2000s where I decided that cocaine was a good idea again. Yeah. Just one New Year's Eve, some guy said, do you want to try this? I said, I hadn't tried this since the 80s. I don't remember liking it. Well, the difference between the 80s and then is then I had, the 2000s, I had money.
Yeah.
And it just took off, and it was just...
Real
crazy.
Were you like waking up and doing it? No.
No, never that crazy. But... waking up and being suicidal.
Oh.
And then waiting 2 or 3 days, and then doing it again on a 2 or 3 day, go. Sex parties and ridiculous stuff. Stuff that you can't even imagine yourself doing, you know. That you still... Then I see when we bring that up right now,
I've never been in a sex party.
When I bring that up on the air, even though I finally went on the air with it, it's still, when I do that on the air, I get this little right here. Because I wish I could skip... I wish I could go back and not do that period of my life. That's the only one I really have like that.
Really?
Yeah, and when we do the stories, when we joke about it,
yeah,
I enjoy the laugh, but there's always in the back of my mind just a little... a twinge of regret.
Yeah,
you know, that I went off and did that. So because I hurt some people, and I wish I hadn't, but I did.
That
so.
Happens.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this: what's the problem with comedians and morning shows? I'll tell you my problem with normal morning, or not even morning. It's just regular radio people. When you go on, and I've heard Patton Oswalt kind of go off on shit like this, but my personal problem that I relate to in that situation is there's a dismissive vibe a lot of times when you go in. Like, they'll be like, oh, yeah, and they're doing another job. And a lot of times comics, and I notice this even a little bit more than musicians, are so personal about if you're paying attention to them, because obviously they're talking. You know what I mean? And so is that what – do they come in with that attitude without knowing
what you
do?
Let's do that, and then when we do this, you've got to ask me about what the radio's problem is when musicians come in.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Go ahead. I've talked to you about before.
Okay,
and it's not all radio. I get Patton Oswalt's. I was following Patton on Twitter, and I love Patton Oswalt. He was one of our best guests ever. And I hope we do this differently. And we've heard from every. I mean, I'm doing Doug Benson's podcast at the end of November,
and you've had him on.
And
yours.
He's done mine. Yeah. There are a lot of comics that will say our radio show is different. And again, if you're in the middle of the podcast, it's 93.7. FM in Austin, and you can tune in at klbjfm.com in the morning. We do stream live. We try. Now, not always is it successful, and here's the difference. And this isn't a matter of tooting our own horn. I'm just telling you from my perspective. I tried to do stand-up comedy in the early 80s.
I was going
to
ask
and
you.
And I wasn't bad for looking back at that kid. I was a prop comic, which comics hate, but I didn't know it at the time. I never got far enough into it
Of props?
Oh, ridiculous stuff. I had a whole
hand puppets or anything like
that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everything. As a matter of fact, I had a hand puppet, but I did a whole bit. It was really bad. I did a bit from Alien where the thing pops out of his chest, but instead a Fozzie Bear popped out of the guy's chest.
Okay.
I wish I did on tape because it's really, really bad. But I did hang out with comedians, and I got to know Bill Hicks a little bit.
Okay.
And Bill and I were, I would say, acquaintances. I don't want to say friends.
Were you down in Houston during that time? Or
no, I was in Lubbock.
Okay. And but he was coming up there.
But everybody was, dude, Lubbock had 3 comedy clubs at one time. That's how huge comedy was in 82.
It exploded.
It was insane.
Yeah.
And I was the house comic for one called The Laughing Stock of Texas. And then there was Abbey Road. And then there was another one. I can't remember the name of it. But Bill came through. And he would stay up all night partying and then come in and do my radio show. And I would give anything for tapes. I've got thousands of tapes of stuff that no one will ever listen to. And I've yet to run across one that had Bill on. And Bill would come in and literally just do Elvis for 30 minutes on the air. But but I hung around those guys. And... So when the radio show started taking off and we started getting comics in there, I never wanted the comic to come in and tell jokes. I wanted him to come in and do what Bill did in Lubbock, which is hang out and refuse to do bits, right? Not go into your stage routine because I wouldn't do my stage routine, which I couldn't do anyway,
right?
You know, because it's visual and it was terrible.
Right.
I don't know where the thing was where we just decided when a comic comes in, just make him part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And most of the time, that's what we do. And we get comics that come in, and they'll do about two or three segments of the show, maybe an hour, if they're new. And they'll go, dude, this is so different than most of the radio I do. And we'll go, well, why? And they say, what has happened? And I'll cut their disc jockey, the radio guys, a break. I've been very lucky that I haven't been under the gun of a program director all these years because I've been able to stay on the top and not have a guy come in and go, you're doing this wrong, you're doing that wrong, you're doing this wrong, make this quicker.
Right.
We've been very lucky. We've worked for two incredible companies that believe in freedom.
Right.
But these guys, I'll give you the radio guy's perspective. Let's say a guy in Des Moines who gets one rating book or two ratings books a year, and he's got a guy who's untalented, who's his program director going, you need to do this and have that guy in there. And why isn't he telling jokes? Why the fuck isn't that guy telling jokes?
Right.
Instead of letting the guy have
letting
a conversation.
Letting him do the weather or
something. So what happens is they come in and these disc jockeys will sit there and go, well, so Doug Benson, I hear you're a marijuana smoker.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, are you ever worried about law enforcement?
Yeah.
And then they'll turn the mic off and they'll go, so how can I lead you into some of your jokes, man? What do you want to do? Should I bring up airport food is the old standby. So I think that's the thing that Patton Oswalt hates is that you get up early in the morning and it's yuckle and chuckle going, hey, Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, yeah.
They hate that because they're not allowed just to have a normal flow of conversation and they're expected to do their bits, which on our perspective, I've always had comics in and said, hey, man, catch up when you can, jump in when you can. And since we've added Matt Bearden to the show, he's given me the perspective that there's also a thing. They don't know. These comics coming in don't know who you are and don't know what to expect. So let's take some time and tell them during the break and say, hey, man, don't worry about it if you got nothing to say. But if you got something to say, either raise your hand or just jump in when you can and be part of the story and the conversation. So that's the comedy perspective that we've had, and we've ended up making great friends that way. I mean, we have some people who used to do the show who ended up being our buddies who have, who are some of them? Ron White was one of my, moving into my house.
Yeah.
He was leaving his girl, and he'll tell you this. If you ever have him on, he'll tell you he called me and said, I'm going to send some boxes over. He broke up with his girlfriend, didn't have any money. And he called me one day. He goes, is Jeff Foxworthy just called me? He wants me to go on some redneck comedy tour. I'll call you. I'll save the room. I'll call you when I'm done. And he called me a few weeks later. He goes, man, you're not going to believe this, but I'm on Foxworthy's jet, and we're packing the house. And that was it. And now he's has a house in L.A. and a house in Atlanta, and he's doing well. When I look back, when it's all done, that'll be some gratifying stuff. Is that I made these friendships with people. Like Doug Benson and like Ron White and Carlos Mencia. That's another thing that we have to ride a kind of fine line because we've made friends with comics that other comics hate and other comics are mad at. So we get this really weird deal where somebody will come in. It happened a few weeks ago where a comic came in and he was just trashing a guy that we knew. And you just have to go on the air and be honest. You go, okay, hey, man, fuck it. He's a friend of mine, but if you don't like him, I get it. That's relationships. That's life.
Mencia is an alleged joke thief.
Yeah, but when Carlos was up and coming before he got famous, he would come in and do two or three hours on the radio and take over the show and kill the audience.
Yeah.
And pack the house at the comedy club.
Right.
And the stuff he did.
And then his bits would be fresh.
But his stuff on the air had nothing to do with his bits, so who knows? So I can't really get into that. And we've had Joe Rogan on, and I consider Joe a show business friend. I'm putting that in quotation. And Joe's a friend. We've had that discussion, and we've had that thing where we go, you ride the line and go, well, shit, dude, I'm not going to take a side here because I don't really have a dog in the hunt. Nobody's stealing my jokes for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been, but the comedy thing, I think that from that perspective, I get Patton's deal. The thing with Patton, the only thing that bothers me is that they are giving you free airtime to plug your shit.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's always been my thing is like, if it is a bother, don't go.
Yeah, and then there's the musician thing. I've had issues in the past where you'll come. I'm going to use you for an example, but this has never happened, I don't think. You're scheduled to do the show in whatever it was, whether it was your band, Gowdy or whatever band. And then you come in, but the other guys in the band aren't briefed on the show and don't really want to do the show. And you have a drummer or somebody who's just asleep in the corner and says, I don't really. That's when you're doing what we do and you're in the third hour and you're already, your day is almost over and you've been nothing but adrenaline for 3 hours. Yeah. It's tough. That it's tough on our end to see that sort of thing. So, but with the new rating system, we've had to cut back on live music like crazy because according to the, you know,
it doesn't sell.
The powers that be, nobody likes live music on the radio, which I don't think
nobody
is necessarily
likes live
true.
Music in the clubs either. Apparently, it's a good thing. That was just a whiny joke. But so why don't people like Paul Mooney? Because he's arrogant. I noticed some people really like him and some people fucking hate him.
I have nothing. I've never seen a stand-up act.
But he came on your show.
My issue with Paul Mooney is he came into my domain and told me what we should and shouldn't be doing on the air. I made a joke he thought was inappropriate, and off the air, on the air or off the air, I think, I can't remember now, because sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between a, that's another compliment that's the biggest compliment that comedians and other people on the show have said. They go, are we on the air? Because I never know the difference between the conversation on the air and off the air, which means we try not to have a fake conversation. Yeah. But Mooney came in and just decided, and you know, if I ask you, Johnny, where did you get started? What were your influences? And you tell me.
Yeah.
And you want to tell me, well, you know, I grew up in, where'd you grow up, Houston?
No, Houston, California.
Houston, California.
Miami.
Yeah. And you answer the question. But Mooney came in going, I was meant to do this. I was meant to be this. And it's this thing where you, I don't know, I think it's called, I don't know if there's a name for it. Just, it's like, oh man, instead of doing a nice, fun interview, I've got to bullfight.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I get to spend 2 hours. And the thing was with Mooney is they came in and it's this living legend, allegedly.
Right.
And it's like, I got to kiss somebody's fucking ass now for 2 hours.
Right.
And my audience is going to be alienated and they can hear me be uncomfortable and I'm not going to get anything out of them. Where if, for example, if I have Kevin Nealon on, Kevin Nealon will come in, and if he doesn't want to answer the question, he'll give me some sort of ridiculous answer that's funny and not...
He'll be professional.
He'll be professional. Right. But Mooney, when he said, you shouldn't do that on the air. You shouldn't, after all this time, and, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe it was just me, you know. There have been people that the other people on the show have loved. They go, oh, my God, what the fuck was your problem? I love him. Like, Gary Busey came in and loved everybody on the show but me.
Really?
And I almost threw him out, but he's crazy.
Yeah, well, how crazy is he in real life?
Real like, crazy.
Really? Like that? As crazy as you think he is?
He's fucking insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he thought I was the engineer because I run my own board.
Yeah.
And in LA, if you went to a radio show, there'd be the host and there'd be a guy running the board.
Right.
So he thought I was an engineer. So the other guys on the show are asking him, are talking to him. And then I ask a question. He turns, he goes, who are you? Who are you? And I said, I'm the host. He goes, well, you need to get a book. And I go, what book? He goes, you need to get a book on how to host a radio show. And it was just this.
You say it on the air?
Yeah. We have tape of it. But that's probably top five crazy fucking people in all the world. The other craziest people, we had the porn star. What was her name? And years ago, we can't have porn stars on anymore because your government is protecting you. And they created something in 2003 called the Decency Act so that children wouldn't be hurt by hearing porn stars on the air. But there was a porn star that came in one morning that was still had coke caked into her nostrils. Yeah. Probably about the same time I was doing it too. But she came in with a dog in a bag. I think it was Anna Mall. I think she's dead. I think she died in a car wreck. And she came in one morning. Now I'm getting two different porn stars confused. Anna Mall did come in high. But then there was another porn star that came in with a dog in a bag. And she was, we were having an editor. She was saying, hey, any of you guys want to fuck me right now? Let's fuck right now. I was, come on, let's do it. Let me give you a blowjob on the air. It was the weirdest fucking morning. And she was so gross that no one would, everybody's like, no, because a blowjob sounds good, but no.
Right,
I was just
right,
like, no.
Yeah.
And we go to breaks and she goes, no, it'd be a great bit. I want to do this on Leno. It was real weird. But there have been some strange people come through in 25 years.
I had a morning like that during South by Southwest at the end of the film festival, beginning of the music festival week.
This year?
No, it was a few years ago, quite a few years ago. I can't name any names, but I played a gig for the end of the film festival on Sunday night, and then I had forgotten that Monday morning I was going on that Fox television show.
On TV here?
On TV here. Yeah. And I was literally at someone's house. The television was on and my picture came up and it was like this. I was like, oh my God. Like,
oh, you were high.
Yeah. I was totally like partying. I was like, shit, I've got to.
Well, now I want to interview you.
Can anyone drive?
Yeah.
And so my friend took me down there. We went to Starbucks. She was like, let's go to Starbucks. It'll look like we were
I was supposed to be on TV. And you forgot.
Right.
You were up partying.
But an hour before I was supposed to be on, so I was good. So I go down there.
You're making me need to go. Just even talking about it makes me want to go poop. Fucking Coke is horrible,
it's
man.
Horrible.
It's so fucking horrible.
But the lady, I walked up and the girl that's on there came up and said, Riley, you haven't slept, have you? And I went, no. And she goes like this. She wipes her nose.
Oh,
and I was
no.
like, oh, shit. I was like, your guest. My friend didn't do a good job, even though I had Starbucks.
Do you, I'm sure yours was different, but do you look back on that stuff and just find, like, the conversations you would have and things like that where you just go, why?
Yeah, that's why I stopped doing it, because it was like,
it's been a long time for you too?
It's been a while, yeah. It's just, you end up with people you don't want to hang out with.
No, you know, I hung out with people that should have I got robbed. I've told that story on here before. I went home my mom was ill, and I went home, and that was another thing I regret is I spent all that time, but my mom, went back to see my mom, and I was in Tyler, Texas, and I ran out of blow. I was high as a kite.
Right.
And Tyler's very segregated. The black part of town is the north part of town, and the south part of town is the... So I went to the north part of town, and I just literally rolled down my window to these guys, and I go, hey, you gentlemen wouldn't know where I could procure any cocaine, would you? And three guys jump in my car, and they go, drive around here. It's a gas station. And I drove around to the back of the gas station, and they go, and they pulled out something in their pocket, and I go, how much? And they go, 80. And I opened up my wallet, and I had like $300, and they said, all of it, motherfucker. And they didn't pull any gun. They didn't need to. They just scared the shit out of me anyway, and I was already high. And then as I'm pulling out of the parking lot to get away, I hit the curb and blew a tire, and I'm changing my tire in the middle. It's 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm high, and I'm changing a tire on my car. And these guys are circling me, laughing at me, which was good because they could have killed me, or could have hurt me, but they didn't hurt me. Yeah, just such a fucking horrid drug.
At least let me ask you a question. You have two kids. Would you tell your kids that story? Because to me, this would keep me from doing drugs more than like this is like a fried egg. You know what I mean? Or like someone that's never done it, tell it like, you know, it's yours. Oh, it's so bad. And you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
but I don't know.
Something like that is terrifying.
When do you tell them that story is the question.
Right.
You know, I don't know when you would tell them. Do you tell them when they're 12 or do you wait till they're 16 to tell them that story?
Right.
Or 18.
Going to college or something.
Yeah. I think the best thing you can do is be honest and say, yeah, it almost made you not be born. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not that far yet. I'm not that far along. I've had kids later in life, so I have no idea. I know that whole thing, you know, where people say, well, you know, my parents drank, so I didn't drink. That didn't work for me.
Right.
It worked for a while.
Your parents drank a lot.
Drank a lot. But I didn't really get into it until I left them, and then I drank. You know, but I, you know, that's something that I've, that's been my friend for many, many years. But I'm doing it a lot less than I used to do it.
Right.
So,
well, that's good.
No, that's all we used to do. Remember?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Still, it seems like that way. I have like a normal time, and then like a crazy drinking time.
Yeah.
But it becomes less and less as you get older.
The funny thing is, when I did the drugs, I stopped drinking very much.
Oh, really?
Didn't go hand in hand. Mm. It didn't go hand in hand, but you know.
So I have an important question.
Okay.
What came first for you, The Voice, or you wanted to have the job? Like, you wanted to do it before your voice sounded like it did? Because to me, there's people in radio and in broadcasting. Some of them are people that somebody said, well, you got a great voice.
No,
you should be on
I still don't have a great voice. I have a nasally, I have a very nasally voice, and I slur. I have a natural slur to my voice. I never get hired.
Maybe I'm just used to your voice.
Yeah.
So it's like,
it's really not a great radio voice. And I slur and I stutter, and I never get hired to do voiceover work. I don't try, but I just don't. I did some character work for Lone Star last year that was some prank phone calls where I pretended to be, you know, but it's not really something that I was born with, I don't think, at all. I know a ton of people that have great radio voices that, you know, don't even work on the air anymore.
Oh.
No, I never had the voice. Matter of fact, I was called into an office once and told I didn't have a voice to stop trying because I was doing that whole KGBB. I would do that whole puking thing where you know, radio guy, good morning, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe I do that a little bit. I try to talk a little lower sometimes, maybe. I don't know.
I catch myself talking a little bit lower on these.
I think you sound fine.
Good, thanks.
Yeah, you think anybody's still with us?
No, I think everyone's still with us.
Really?
Yeah, people
See,
listen to these
See, that's my
things.
Paranoia.
Is it? Yeah. I worry, too.
Yeah.
I worry too that I'm not that I'm.
I also think I'm out of stories. Like I notice I don't have anything, any new stories.
They're all these old stories.
They're the old stories. Like new things happen, but not as dramatic.
Right.
You know. Then I worry. I go, oh, here I go. I'm telling the fucking robbery story again.
Well, no, that's a good story, and I've never heard it.
Yeah.
Maybe some of these people have never heard it.
No, I've always wanted to write that out in a book and try to make it funny, and I sat down to try to write it out, and it actually just seems so fucking tragic that you let your life get to that point, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an honest thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, it's what you do.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about, were you ever in trouble in school for talking too much?
No. No, and actually there is a report card where it said Dale's decided to, the second or third grade, and so I have it, it says Dale has decided to stop doing his work. He just sits and talks all day. So
you have it framed?
No, I've stopped framing things. I actually threw away my high school trophies this year.
What did you have trophies for? What'd you
do? when you grow up in a neglected home, you tend to look for validation.
Let me ask you a question. Stop right here. You grew up in a neglected home and you were isolated. You have an older sister. She was older than you. You have any other siblings close to your age?
Yeah. Well, my brother was 5 or 6 years older than me. What happened was my parents really didn't get bad until I turned about 12. And then they started drinking heavily. My dad at night and my mother eventually all day long. And my brothers and sisters all were out of it by that time. So my brother was 5.5 years older than me. So he had stayed with my grandmother to go to school in a small town in West Texas. And my sisters were already out and married or out in college. So it was just me and these two crazy people sitting there together.
So you'd listen to the radio religiously then?
Yeah, did you? Radio
and so
records.
Did you have
a
connection with the guys that were talking to you on the radio?
Yeah, but you know what though? I mean, to be really honest with you, I had more of a connection with Elton John and Peter Frampton and the music stuff. I wanted so badly that kind of recognition. You know, you want that. You want to someday I'll be out of it. I don't think you ever have a conscious thought that someday I'll be out of this. You thought that was normal. You thought being with your parents was normal, but you projected. I mean, how many people have you talked to in show business who come from something where they needed, and it's
always
And you feel like you want to say shut the fuck up, and finally, you know what? At my age, I hear people say shut the fuck up, but it's something that it's a hole you never fill, and you're constantly looking for either a hit record. Or you're constantly looking for ratings, or you're constantly looking for... And I always feel
some kind of validation.
I feel for the people who didn't get some sort of release, because I've had an amazing chance. And even these podcasts, and maybe that's your answer if you're listening, start your own podcast. Who cares if three fucking people hear it?
Right.
You'll have the conversation. It'll be out there, and you never know. There's the great thing about podcast is the interconnection. I'm doing Johnny's podcast now. I'm going to go on the radio and promote it. I'll mention the site.
Yeah.
I'll put the link up on Twitter. And then new people will hear
it.
Same goes for Tank and Teabag. Same goes for Doug Benson.
Right.
And, you know, it doesn't matter how small it is. If you can make the interconnections with people, it's the true definition of the web.
Right.
It's a web of people, you know, with uncensored conversations.
Yeah.
So I forgot what we originally
talking about. I was asking you if you felt a connection with the guys that were in broadcasting, but you were saying you felt more
of a
connection.
Yeah,
I
did when I hit
people.
About 16 and 17 when I started listening to tapes, and then I got the part-time job at the radio station. I really, really did. I remember I won a record from a guy, and I heard him on the phone. You talk about the rumbling voice. His name was Jack Monroe, and I remember winning the album, and he goes, yeah, and this voice was coming from the telephone, and I went, wow, that's pretty cool. Because I could tell by then I wasn't going to be a musician, but it was to be close to the music and the rock and roll and the whole lifestyle back then, which, you know, was totally different than it is now. I mean, there were bands.
Yeah.
And there were no Britneys. There were bands.
Yeah.
And there were no Lady Gagas. It was guys in a band, guys in bands. And they always had girls with them. And they had these giant, you know, and you didn't hear them. Like now, stuff is on television constantly. If you turn on any media, you can see the pop stars. Back then it was bands like the Stones or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was, if you could get to Dallas to see a band like, okay, let's say, I'll take Texas GM, for example.
Yeah.
When Van Halen, when I'm 17 and Van Halen hits, you go, shit, Van Halen's coming to Dallas for the Texas GM. And everybody's trying to find a ticket. And it's Ticket Scalper. It's kind of like that, what's the movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High?
You know,
Damone. You're trying to get a ticket, and then somebody comes back. You didn't get to go, but because your parents wouldn't take you to Dallas, and somebody comes back to East Texas, and they go, yeah, I fucking saw Van Halen.
Yeah.
And there wasn't this instant feedback. It was this thing that was off in the distance. And then when you, and you had your albums,
yeah,
and you would go, your parents would be drunk or yelling at you, and you would escape into your room, and yeah, you had your fucking albums, yeah, and these bands and these artists were your friends, and you didn't give a fuck whether they looked good.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have to be good looking like they do now. They just, you just, the music was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have that now. And I'm not knocking Lady Gaga. I just use that as an example. I actually heard her and do some acoustic stuff. It was pretty fucking incredible.
Right.
But I'm saying, you know, the Justin Bieber's and stuff like that. Yeah. You didn't have that.
Right.
Just throw shit out there, and it doesn't matter if it's quality. You had this thing where you had these tested bands, and you didn't get to see them that often.
Yeah.
And when you did, it was a big, big deal.
Yeah.
And we all wanted that because that was kind of an escape.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I remember that, and I remember because I was a big Kiss fan then, you know, and I would, you know, the Circus magazine would have like two or three new photos of them, just like it, you know, it was always like a huge thing, or like the event, you know, that that so many people talk about, the Beatles on Sullivan, like that can't happen now.
No,
it just can't, because you can miss it. You can watch it on YouTube tomorrow. Then, like, if you didn't see that, you fucked up, and the next day you weren't cool.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And I remember, you know, as a little bitty boy when my sisters were in the Beatles, and I can still just see flashes of that, even from a small town in West Texas when we were out there. And I remember getting on the, learning all the songs and singing them on the back of a bread truck and charging the kids in the neighborhood a penny to watch me sing the Beatles songs.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it didn't pan out. I never became a musician, which I've always been envious of. Very envious of a musician.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, hanging out in the Steamboat days when we first met.
That's when we first met.
You know, and watching, very envious of stand-up comics and very envious of good stand-up comedy.
Yeah,
and
I've been
very, and very envious of musicians.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I was going to get. I wanted to ask you this question.
Ask me.
Why are most musicians are a tough interview. I can interview a comedian all day long.
Yeah.
You said you have Ian coming on.
No, I had him on.
Oh, you had Ian Moore on. I like Ian. I like.
I had Ian Moore on.
You guys talked about music.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I also, Ian and I have been friends since we were 16.
No, so. And I've known Ian, yeah. Ian too for a very long time. And Ian's a bad example. But it is hard to interview musicians.
Some it is hard.
It's really hard. You know, Schneider... I've been over to, you know, I go a couple of summers ago, I was taking Jake and my son over to Bob Schneider's house to swim.
Yeah. It's like a celebrity thing.
And maybe it's because I was a huge fan and I came off as a fanboy. But
he's not a good example.
It's hard to talk.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot to say. It's not the same sense of humor.
Yeah, no. And although he's a big fan of comedy too, but like, yeah, when I first wanted to do this, I loved your podcast. I loved Mark Maron's podcast. And I was like, this is, you know, I can do this. And then once I was having the comedians on, it was like, it almost seemed like it was all real, or not the comedians, but I was having the musicians on. It was like, fuck, these guys don't, you know, there's no like, you can't volley shit back and forth and kind of cut up, because a lot of people don't really think like that. And a lot of musicians want to be taken seriously.
Well, is it also because they're not used to talking?
No, I think it's because a lot of times people want to be taken seriously, and they think like if they come off with the ability to laugh at themselves in public, people won't respect them anymore. And to me, it's always been the opposite.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's as much that. I've always thought maybe I just asked the wrong questions. I don't know. You know, I mean, if you're not a musician, what do you ask a musician? The old cheesy, what are your influences, is always one.
Yeah.
But there's also, you know,
there's also a lot of musicians who think they're smarter than you because you're a radio guy and they're like musicians.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you said that.
You know?
I'm glad you actually said that.
Yeah, that's true.
Because
I mean, there's tons of people that think that shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, we get that. We know we've always made that joke on the rung of show business ladder, we're right below stripper and carnival barker.
Yeah.
As far as show
business.
Well,
I mean, it's just silly because, I mean, we're all in the same boat. We're all doing the same thing. And I mean, the fact of the matter is like you do four hours.
Yeah.
You do 4 hours of live radio.
4 hours of talk.
You talk for 4 hours, 5 days a week.
3 or 4 minute breaks. Yeah.
20 hours a week you spend talking with an audience.
Yeah. I actually did this rant day before yesterday.
Well, go ahead. What was it?
Well, we had an incredible, weird, kind of funny thing happen on the radio show where a young lady that just started working for us, my son wasn't taking care of his guinea pig, and we gave her the guinea pig.
Okay, yeah.
And I asked, and then my son has been missing the guinea pig. It really does kind of tug at my heart a little bit. And he's asking about the guinea pig, and we told him it went to live with his mother, whatever. And I came in one morning, and I said, how's the guinea pig? And the girl's name's Carissa. She may be listening. And Carissa says, he's fine. I go, well, we want to visit him. You know, Jacob's asking about him. So we got to figure out what we're going to do. And she came in 30 minutes later, and it was some of the best radio ever. It was this Monday on the KLBJ FM podcast, Monday or Tuesday. And she burst into tears and started crying. The guinea pig died while she was at ACL or something like that. And it just was this, just, you know, I was sad about the guinea pig, but I could see good radio, and I was just rolling with it. And we did a whole show, and we were getting kudos, you know. Well, the next day I had some questions, and so I decided to ask the questions. And I get a thing on my Facebook. Hey, are y'all going to talk about this again? Fuck! I'm going to listen to ESPN for 2 weeks. Y'all have fun until you're over this guinea pig shit. And I went off on the air. I went, dude, I got 20 fucking hours to fill, and one moment doesn't make you happy. But that's okay.
Yeah,
I tune out of shit too.
Yeah,
when I don't like something. If I accidentally tune into Sean Hannity or something, saying something ridiculous, and I change the channel, I don't feel the need to get on his webpage and tell, hey, Sean.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I really didn't like you talking about
Boutros Ghali the way you did, and I'm out. But this guy, so you'll be in the middle of the show, and social media is great because it is instant feedback, but you get on and you just go, well, fuck. And then I end up going, dude, we have 20 hours to fill. What the fuck do you want us to do?
Dude, that happens. I'm obviously, you know this. We played your wedding and shit. I'm in this band, Skyrocket, this cover band.
Rocked our wedding, and we still love to go see you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's some people, like, the internet, I guess, has given people the anonymity, or at least the wall is up that they can't really get, like, they can just say things, like, you know, because you're not a person or anything. Like, there's a couple of instances. One of them is we played in San Antonio. The place was kind of crappy that we were playing. It closed down, and we didn't get back into San Antonio for a couple of months. And people are writing, you know, oh, when are you coming back to San Antonio? You get to San Antonio, we play this gig. It's packed. It's so awesome to be back. The people are super into it. I'm standing at the end of the bar. It's a perfectly great bar, and people are just walking up like, I hate this place. There's too many people here. And you're just like, what the fuck? Well, you know, what the fuck? Like, I can't please you in every way. I get emails like, oh, I didn't like this song you played.
Oh, you're talking about when you're
like
on
fans,
the internet.
No,
that's the truth. And I was going to save this for my next podcast. I had somebody who decided it's a whole, I don't want to get into the reasons why. I'll tell you later. I'll tell you on my podcast, whatever, taintteabag.com. Plugs get in here now.
Yeah.
But someone questioned my parenting because of stories they heard on the radio. I've been very open about my drug abuse in the past, which I don't touch drugs anymore, and my alcoholism. I went 40 days without drinking and then decided it was my birthday, and I would like to have a drink on my birthday. And someone questioned whether or not I was a good parent and that my children were in a set. So in other words, they were taking things that I decided to share with them, little bitty snippets of my life, little bitty tiny bits of my story. Yeah. And now, on a public platform, we're gauging the entire universe of my parenting skills, which is private. Now, that's mostly my fault.
Yeah.
Two things. I'm a public figure. And number two, I decided to put that stuff out there. So you are allowed to make judgments.
Right.
But this need to say, to let the person know that you somehow have an insight or they suck or whatever, that's part of it. You know, that's part of the deal. Is the instant feedback in the social media. So that's what I like about podcasting. So far, I've only gotten one person, same person actually, who's complained about the podcast because it's that whole thing, well, if I fucking hate this, I'm not listening to it anymore, you know?
Yeah.
It's not the need to respond immediately like you do in regular media. And I've been guilty of it. I've gone online and written shit that I...
Have you?
Yeah, I have. Especially political stuff, or on CNN.com where no one's going to ever read it.
Right.
Right. It's I think it's a way of...
Venting,
saying, hey, look at me, I matter. Don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes I'm not going to put myself in the group of artists, but I would say artists and show business people, sometimes you have to... We're sensitive people, but we have to go, this is a way for other people to get their word out. You know? to let you know that they matter.
Right.
Which they, you know, I guess they do.
So when people criticize you like that and on the show, or they come after you personally, does it hurt your feelings?
I remember it did hurt your feelings. No, it does. But I'm a lot better than I used to be. And Matt Bearden, the comedian on our show, has helped me a lot with that. And he's talked about how if you just let people have it and don't respond to it, then it becomes less of a sensitive thing for either of you. It's the more you respond to that sort of thing.
Are there any that you thrive on and you do respond, or you get
mad?
But
when you start talking about
someone ever writes you on Twitter, you get into Twitter wars with someone like "fuck you."
What I've learned on Twitter,
I've seen a lot of comics do that.
What I've learned on Twitter is retweet. Your fans will go after them.
Yeah,
our fans will go.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, I had one a few weeks ago. I had a guy go off on me about something he had saw me do a long time ago. I went off on a guy in Radio Shack, which is a true story, and I just wrote "true story" retweet. Leave it out there, and then if it continues, you can block. But you know, I'm also trying to resist that urge and just go, hey man,
yeah,
it'll be over tomorrow. You don't know me, fuck it. You know, if you don't know somebody, you really don't know them. You can't sit there and make a judgment. You know about their. I don't listen. I'm not a fan of Glenn Beck.
Yeah,
as a broadcaster, I think Glenn Beck's fucking amazing. He's made $1 billion
doing this deal.
Politically, I don't agree with him.
Right.
But I don't feel the need to get in touch with Glenn Beck and let him know that I don't agree with him.
Right.
You know,
but
there are people who feel that need. So that's the world we live in. And, you know, a lot of my stories, they'll say I'm whining or crying. I'm not. I'm just trying. I try to come in with stuff like my wife wanted to go to ACL, and I put on Facebook. So we get in an argument about it. And my problem with going to ACL, my deal with ACL is, how many concerts have I been to in my career?
You and I have done. But you go with the carte blanche. You can get a golf cart and shit, and you're in the backstage. And
that's not the point.
You are sharing a hookah.
I haven't even seen Plant around. But you, if somebody said to you, Johnny, it's a Wednesday night, Johnny, let's go out and see a band. Maybe not a band you're really into. It's not something you want to go do because it's what you do. You're in a club every weekend, right?
Yeah.
Well, the same thing. We've done concerts for so long, outdoor concerts and those events, that the park it becomes part of your job,
dude.
Right?
Yeah. Well, even for me, I think that's just also getting older and having done it enough times where you're like, not going to see Stevie Wonder. It's like an hour and a half parking. Then you wait for a bus. Then you ride your thing. Then you can't go outside. Then when you leave, it's a whole other hour.
And you have to hope you have the right credentials. And if you don't, you got to go find the right person. And if you do, it's never about the music. It's about work.
Right.
So. I got in this argument with my wife, and it got a little heated, and I finally realized that her feelings were hurt. So I said, we'll go. And then the funny part was she said, no, we're not going because you'll complain all day. So I had to add in the caveat. Not only now will I go, but I also am not allowed to complain tomorrow, right?
Right.
That's funny. And I intended to use it on Monday, but also just
putting it out there, general funniness.
For Facebook, I said, hey, she got me.
Yeah,
the funny part is I not only have to go to ACL, but I can't complain all day long. How many guys have had that conversation?
I was just about to say.
Whether it's ACL or whatever it is you want to do, going to a family reunion. I not only have to go to the family reunion now, but I'm not allowed to complain all day long. I gotta bite my tongue all day long. The irony of this is I went to ACL and I had an absolute fucking blast because it was like a reunion with old friends. And we had just a super time, and then I got to see Stevie Wonder.
That's awesome.
And it was great, but it had nothing to do with ACL. Well, some guy on Facebook wrote, "Well, you poor you, you've got a young wife, got to go with your young wife to a great outdoor concert."
Yeah.
And I went, "Fuck, are you kidding me, dude? I'm just doing a bit on the internet." But somebody, the way they read it, they go, "Oh, what a fucking whiny ass motherfucking pussy. He's got to go." And he doesn't see it from the perspective of what the actual argument was about. So
I actually had a friend of mine at some point after I was on your show tell me a story about someone that they worked with that couldn't believe they were friends with me because they thought, there's people that kind of think that you're no longer like you're Michael Jackson in the Billie Jean video. Like everywhere you go, the floor lights up. Every step you take, like everything you do is golden. Every time you piss, it's like amazing. You know what I mean? You'd never get VD or anything. You know what I mean? Like things like this, or have a drug problem or anything like that. And he thought that it was like, well, man, you know how those guys are. man, they're, you know, they project this sort of like larger than life thing. Do people like end up, they feel like they can, you know, that guy knows what your life is like.
Right.
You know
what
I
mean? That's
like,
what I was
shut
talking
up,
about earlier.
You got a beautiful wife and you've done yeah, yeah, yeah. about it. They didn't fucking
They did that
know.
To you though?
Yeah. Well, not in a bad way. The guy just was in disbelief that I knew a guy that worked at a bank. Like, oh, why would he hang out with you?
It's no,
like,
and I'm blown
just
away.
All regular people.
You don't have a fucking lighted dance floor here.
No, it's I don't. It's a pretty small apartment.
It's a small apartment.
Yeah.
No.
It's by the lake, though.
But I'm envious of this equipment. Yeah. See, now the show business self-doubt in me is kicking in now that we've covered almost an hour. I go, oh, fuck, what did we talk about? God damn it. Why did we talk about that? Why did we talk about something else?
Well, this is the first one that wasn't like really, I mean, I'm glad that we've been able to talk, and I've always liked you. I remember the first time you and I ever talked, and it was at Steamboat downstairs. I think I had been on your show. I can't remember if it was my show or not, but we were hanging out downstairs. Having drinks.
If we were downstairs,
talking.
Then I was downstairs with Danny smoking pot.
We all were.
Yeah.
So you came down, you went upstairs, I think, and got us drinks. And then you came back down and someone had insulted you or something at the bar. And I remember when you said you like came down, and this guy fucking called me an asshole or something at the bar.
Yeah.
And I remember going like, God.
Everywhere
dude,
you
like,
go.
I'll be friends with you. And I've just always liked you since then
well, thanks,
for some
man.
Reason.
I've always liked you too. You've always been easy to talk to.
Yeah, thanks.
Or in
you
interviews.
Too.
The fact that my wife is madly in love with you. You know,
she's a really lovely person.
No,
you guys are both lovely people. I like hanging
you're
out.
You're a talented
you.
Dude. That's the weird thing about this town.
I didn't mention this is that when I was on the Taint and Teabag podcast, I got a lot of feedback. I got
oh,
a lot of emails from people that good. I never had met before. That
cool.
They were all really nice.
And you'll get more tomorrow because I'll be mentioning this.
Nice
and tweeting it and talking
well,
about it.
I think
it.
This will air on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
And I'll
of
put
next,
it up on Wednesday. Yeah.
Wednesday of next week.
Wednesday of next week.
Cool. Well, thank you. If anybody stuck it out this long, I appreciate it. Can I get my
plugs in? Thank you for coming by. Yeah, plug it away.
TaintandTeabag.com. There's 13 episodes, 12 episodes up right now. 14 is about to go up, and then 13 may go up later. It's really boring. The morning show is at klbjfm.com. It streams more 6 to 10 Central. I get that. For some reason in my head, I picture this as like an NPR thing that you have these musicians from all over the country tuning in. And if they stuck it out this long, I'm sorry, I wasn't a musician. It's klbjfm.com. And then if you're in Austin, it's 93.7 FM.
Yeah.
So, and Austin Monthly Magazine. There you go.
It's a great column. I remember actually at Thanksgiving when I was going to say that you wrote a really good Thanksgiving story that I was blown away because I didn't know that side of you.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry. No.
I'm
Cuban, so.
Well, I think it would be tough to make you cry anyway.
Yeah.
So.
It is
well,
tough
cool.
to make
I usually
cry.
Cry when I write them. I do. I've, a couple of times I've written those and I've gotten a little choked up as I read them out.
That's nice.
Especially they involve kids or dogs.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sort of thing.
Dogs get me. Well, thanks for coming by,
well, cool,
Dale.
Man.
Dale
What's the
Dudley.
Name of the podcast?
It's called How Did I Get Here?
How Did I Get Here?
Yeah.
Cool.
We've kind of figured
Thank
out
you,
how
John
you got here round and about.
Appreciate
right?
it, man. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy. All right, so that was my friend Dale Dudley. I'd like to thank him again for taking time out and coming over to my little apartment and sitting in my studio and talking to me. I didn't follow my normal line of questioning, but I did enjoy talking to him. You should hear his podcast, TaintandTeabag.com, and his morning show on KLBJ FM, KLBJFM.com if you're from somewhere else. He is personal, and it's humorous. Once you get to know him, you like him. And his life is funny, and he finds a humor in what he does, so that's great. It's a poetic life. Nakia had to postpone our conversation. I still believe he'll be on Friday. Hopefully that'll be the one. I'm not sure yet, so we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants here at How Did I Get Here. So take care. Here's a little music from John Bryan.